This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Isaiah Rice was born and raised in Asheville, and he spent decades working as a beverage delivery man. But around town, he often went by another name. He was called the Picture Man. Isaiah Rice was well known in his community for taking photographs of everyday life. The snapshots included family, friends, streets, parades, all kinds of things. Isaiah Rice's grandson, Darren Waters, came across the collection of photographs one day, and he was struck by those images. Darren is a historian at UNC Asheville, and he was fascinated by how the photos depicted African-Americans living in urban Appalachia in the mid-20th century. Darren has now digitized the photos with the help of UNC Asheville, and Darren Waters joins me now from Blue Ridge Public Radio. Hello, Darren.
Hi, Frank. It's good to be with you again.
Good to be with you. You're there at Blue Ridge Public Radio, where, in fact, your grandfather's photos are on display, right?
They are. It's interesting to come into the studio now. He is everywhere in here, but it's a good thing. It's good to see him and his work.
And he was everywhere in Asheville. He had the job of delivery man, which got him to cross some even racial boundaries in his truck. Tell us more about what he did.
It really did. It's an interesting body of work that we've had the opportunity to work on. And I tell friends all the time, Frank, that it's interesting that 37 years after his death, that we're talking about him the way that we are. He was someone who I was extremely close to. I had the opportunity to spend the first 13 years of my life with him and was quite close to him. But the photographs, I mean, once we sat down and began to look at the photographs and what was there, we just realized that they were more than just a family photo album, that he had been taking pictures all around the city, in fact, throughout the region. And so they tell a story about African-American life in this region of our state, in this region of southern Appalachia that really does not exist anywhere else. So it's been a very rich project and something that I have enjoyed working on with a number of colleagues at the University of North Carolina at Asheville.
Tell us more about his story, because he wasn't just taking pictures of birthday parties and weddings. He took his camera with him, right? He's very deliberate about wanting to take those pictures.
He really did. I would love to be able to have conversations with him about this now, to know just what he was thinking. And, I've come to the conclusion that he was being intentional about what he was doing. He carried a camera with him all the time. I have had the opportunity to speak with people here who are in the later years of their life now, and they knew him. This year was the 100th anniversary of his birth. He was born in 1917. So talking with some of those people who knew him, and they have told me that the camera was more important to him than his modes of transportation. He had the camera with him all the time.
You call his photos urban folk photography. What do you mean by that?
Well, let's tell the story, especially for this region of southern Appalachia, as we are in the mountain south. There has always been kind of this image of this region as being a place where there weren't many African Americans throughout the history of the entire region. This is something that I have kind of taken on and addressed in my own work. It is interesting that, I was born and raised here in Asheville as well, but I left in 1985 and then decided to work on my PhD at Chapel Hill. And when I was thinking about what I was going to do for my dissertation, I wanted to look at the life experiences of African-Americans, community experiences of African-Americans in this region after the Civil War. So my work focuses on the post-Civil War, late 19th century period. His work looks more at mid-20th century and late 20th century. So I've had to get up to speed on things that were going on in that period because my area of expertise is much earlier. But the image of this region has been that there weren't many African Americans here. That's something that I address in my work. And when you look at his photographs, especially from the urban perspective, because southern Appalachia seemed largely as a rural area, although there's small towns and cities here and there, we don't get that rich depiction of the urban experiences of people in this region, especially African Americans. But his photographs really turn that on its head. We get to see what the experience of African Americans were from an urban perspective. And what I think is unique a further uniqueness about his photographs is that we see it through the eyes of African Americans themselves.
And it does put lie to this. I think Zora Neale Hurston was the one who talked about the two ways in which African American stories were told by white folks, anyway, the conservative story and the liberal story. Mm-hmm. And neither one told the whole story, either you know, happy playing the banjo, according to the conservatives, or the liberals, you know, sort of miserable and having a living in poverty. And these pictures, as you say, show the life of, first of all, not rural, but urban African Americans who, in many cases, are just living their lives. And so describe some of the pictures, because you've got people, you know, running across the street and all kind of dressed. Of course, the main thing is remembering how dressed up people were, black and white, back in the 1950s and 40s. You know, so everybody's got a tie and a hat and a nice top coat and looking pretty good.
And I think, you know, I love to see those images because, you know, maybe we lost some standard somewhere, Frank, over time.
I'm not going back to a tie. I'm not going to go back to the tie, but go ahead, Darren.
But, you know, if you see Mr. Rice himself, he was a well-dressed man. I've told people in conversations of how he was. He was not only, you know, taking these photographs as a photographer, but he was a musician. He sang with a quartet here. I have at my home right now about 60 reel-to-reel audio recordings that he did. Some of them are of the quartet that he sang with. And so we're going to try to get those digitized at some point. So in some ways, I like to see myself as following in his footsteps as a historian of sort, because he was recording history. But these photographs, as you see them, you see pride in the people. You see, despite the fact that we're living during the time of rampant segregation, the height of the civil rights movement, there still is a sense of pride and dignity in the photographs. I marvel at the fact that some of the men are clearly have to be retired men who are coming into town on a daily basis, but they're coming into town very well dressed, which shows, to me, suggests that there is a, again, like I said, a sense of pride and dignity about who you are in your community, despite some of the challenges that the community was facing. Here in Asheville, as you see, you know, and this is happening to many urban spaces now that are going through gentrification, where minority populations are being moved out of the center of the city. You had a lot of that take place here in Asheville as well. So when people come here today, they do question, where are the African Americans in the city? But his photographs show us that that wasn't always the case. So I think I sent to your producer a couple of the photographs that I really, really that are my favorite photographs. And those show people in the center part of Asheville around Pritchard Park, African-Americans that are in those spaces like you do not see now. And I think that that's something about the story that the photographs tell.
Tell us about your discovery of them, because they were, in other words, what was your grandfather's intention? We don't know why he was taking them, but they were never really displayed anywhere in his lifetime.
They weren't. He did one of the things that my mother reminded me of. She was an only child, he and my grandmother's only child. But she did remind me that he would take the photographs. Some of them were in slides. They were slides. And he would actually have community members come together to display the photographs on a screen. I don't know if he ever realized that they would be used the way that they are being used now. But the fact that there are so many different people, because one of the things that my mother did say when she inherited the photographs after her mother passed away was, we were going through them and she was saying, you know, Darren, I don't know who some of these folks are. And so what do you do with these photographs? But we thought, well, you know, we do need to digitize them, because it seems to me that he was trying to record a history. Some of them are photographs that he took inside church as pastors were speaking. He was able to kind of seamlessly capture these pictures without actually drawing attention to himself. One of the cameras that he used to take these photographs with was a small spy camera, which is no bigger than a pack of gum. And he would carry that camera with him all the time. I've told friends before, it's the one camera my mother has yet to give me. She's given me all of his cameras, but she hasn't given me that one. And it's the one I really, really want.
She's afraid of how that's going to show up. She's going to see herself on Facebook in a time she didn't want. Was he able to do these in white communities as well? Did he have that kind of freedom?
He really did, and I think it had a lot to do with his job. The one thing about Mr. Rice, he was very well respected in both the white and the African-American community. He was fully engaged with his community. The year that he passed away, 1989, that year, posthumously, he was awarded, I think it was the Optimist Award for the Optimist Club, which for his community service. And so because of his work as a delivery man with the company that he worked for, he was crisscrossing the color line constantly. And so it's interesting to see some of the photographs that people in the white community who clearly knew who he was would allow him to take pictures. Some of them are candid shots. Some are shots where he actually posed the people. And so it's just a really, really rich collection to go through.
You're going to digitize them. You're in that process now. How many photos are we talking about at this point, Darren?
There's probably a little bit over 1,400 photographs. Mm-hmm. We were really surprised. When my mother gave me most of his cameras, he died in 1980, but she years later, in the early 2000s, she did give me the cameras. There was still film that was undeveloped in the cameras, in all of the cameras. So he was still taking pictures, taking photographs up until the time of his death. And so I think that one of the things that made it so easy for my mom to allow the photographs to be used the way that they're being used now is that they were digitized, and so she got the original photographs back, and she retains copyright of those photographs. And so I'm encouraging, you know, as a historian connected with the university here in Asheville, I am encouraging other people to look and see what they have in their attics that they can bring out. Because some of those papers and those photographs can be digitized rather than being just completely turned over to us, to libraries and to special collections. And you make them available for scholars to use them. I have been very amazed at the work that many scholars are doing with the Isaiah Rice collection. There is at least one class, I think, of the past couple of semesters at UNC Asheville that have been studying the photograph collection itself. We were able to publish, along with two of my colleagues at the university, Dr. Kenneth Betzalel and Mr. Gene Hyde, we collaborated together to write a major article about Mr. Rice for Southern Cultures last year, which was published mm-hmm. in the spring edition this year, about the photographs and about his life. And it's getting us closer to understanding the African-American experience in this region, especially, as I said earlier, through the eyes of African-Americans.
Well, you talked about the fact you are a historian. This has been your life's work to somehow clarify the picture that we have of African-American life in Appalachia. So you're already aware of some of the misunderstandings, and in many ways these photos affirmed some of what you knew. How much have you learned by looking at these pictures that you didn't already know?
Mm-hmm. I think one of the richest things is a point that you just made earlier about the ability to cross the color line. I mean, there were more interactions between we tend to look at that period of time and to see complete separation of races, especially the 50s, because the photographs date from his photographs date from the late 1940s. All the way up until 1980. So we look at the late 1940s, the 50s and 60s, and we tend to believe that there was just ardent, hardcore segregation between the two races. But his photographs show that at least in this space in Western North Carolina, you had more interactions that were occurring between members of the African-American community and the white community than many people would believe to have been possible at the time. And so some of the photographs that were taken inside their home, there are members of the white community who were there. And I think that that is just something that has been very interesting for us to discover.
Obviously, the digital collection, as you say, is going to be the work of scholars for some time to come. What about the display? Blue Ridge Public Radio, that's great. I encourage everybody to go over there right now and just rush the doors right now to see them. But other plans for exhibits for the photos, Darren?
You know, we're going to, once we have a chance to regroup at the end of this year, my colleagues at the university, who I mentioned earlier, Mr. Gene Hyde and Ken Betzalel, We're working on a proposal now for a larger book that will look at some of the Mr. Rice's life and the photographs, placing them in larger context. The exhibit that is here at Blue Ridge Public Radio has been here for over a year. It was an invited exhibit, which was just so much fun to work on. I have a newfound appreciation for curators because that's not something that, you know, that I had done before. But it is hard when you have such an extensive collection and the photographs are quite good. You've had a chance to see them, too. And they are really, really good pictures. So he had an artist eye for taking photographs. It's hard to pick and choose which ones you want to actually put into an exhibit, but we're going to kind of regroup at the end of the year to decide where we would like to send them next. We've had a couple of inquiries from Appalachian State University, Warren Wilson University here, and so we're going to explore those once we have a chance at the end of the year.
And you have a deeper appreciation for his eye when you realize these are not digital cameras. You can't just shoot 50 shots and pick one of them. He's got 12 or maybe 24, and it's expensive if he gets it wrong. So all of that is in play. Well, Darren, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you for having me again, and thank you for giving me an opportunity to talk about my grandfather, which is something I truly enjoy doing.
Darren Waters, a history professor at UNC Asheville, joined us to talk about the collection of photographs by his grandfather, Isaiah Rice. Some of those photos on display at Blue Ridge Public Radio in Asheville. We've got some pictures at our website as well, stateofthings.org, and you can find out how to contact Darren if you want to go through those shoeboxes and get in touch with him or help him identify people in the pictures. Stateofthings.org is our website. Our producers, Anita Rao, Charlie Shelton-Orman, Laura Pelliser, and Jennifer Brookland. Robin Copley's our technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.